The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Sir, I bring this up to you because you yourself questioned Donald Trump's mental state of mind in September of 2019 when you stated to CNN, I quote, if our presidency is not in good shape, then our country is not in good shape. And Mr. Secretary, I could not agree with you more. I'm going to repeat what your quote is. If our presidency is not in good shape, then our country is not in good shape. Inflation's at 9.1%. Gas prices are through the roof. Our adversaries are exploiting our weaknesses across the globe. And our southern border is non-existent. This administration puts the American people last. The left and the dishonest media, which in my humble opinion is the greatest threat to this country, the dishonest media, began questioning President Trump's mental state back in February of 2017, a month into his presidency. We now have President Biden in office for 18 months, and just recently, we now see the mainstream media questioning President Biden's mental state, and for good reason. Sadly, he shakes hands with ghosts and imaginary people. He falls off bicycles. Even at the White House Easter celebration, the Easter Bunny had to guide him back into his safe place. Cue cards that say, sit here, or end of speech, which he actually states, that is, if he stays awake. So my question for you is, sir, have you spoken with any other cabinet members about implementing the 25th Amendment on President Biden?
First of all, I'm glad to have a president who can ride a bicycle.
I did enjoy the visual aids that they had there behind the congressman. Congressman, who is that? Troy Nels, I guess. I'm not sure where he comes from, but on Monday's show, we were talking about that explosive Tucker segment from Friday night and how that really there really isn't much commentary on that. Certainly not inside the walls of Congress. Here is a congressman who at least got close. I didn't listen to the entire line of questioning between him and the transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, there. And I'm not sure if even still they're bringing up the fact that here's a president who's on medication or some kind of drug because the advanced stages of dementia have set in. But at least, I mean, we'll give him credit for at least going there. Have you ever talked about implementing the 25th Amendment? Because you were talking about that the first month into Donald Trump's presidency. And Pete Buttigieg goes on to say, of course not. I mean, of course that's not an issue with Joe Biden. It's not? Pretty amazing. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. They've got some replays through the day as well. Of course, you can get to the video stream of this or the video replays of this at any time during the day. Because we post all of our podcasts after the fact. So just go to thetrumpet.com, our website. You can get to the Trumpet Daily page or the Trumpet Daily section there at the homepage of the website. You can also go to thetrumpet.com/live, and that'll take you direct to the live stream page. I've got an email here, came in from Florida following the program on Monday. And he says, great program. I missed that Tucker segment on Friday. A bombshell, as was your program today. I Googled the story on the fake president and the medication. I found this. Here's a description of the medication. I'm not sure if that's known. I'm sure there's lots of speculation online about what kind of medication it might be. But this viewer says, I noticed an interesting side effect, which may explain his reported indiscretions, most notably in front of the Duchess of Cornwall. So, and Sam had brought out how that there was a post on Reddit, I think a couple months ago, Which is going there, basically, and Tucker certainly is the first high-profile commentator to talk about how drugged up this current occupant of the White House really and truly is. He's nearly 80 years old, and of course, the montages that are out there, I think the RNC put out a video just the other day, on some of, and again, these are all speaking engagements, and everyone, I am in public speaking all the time practically, and it's certainly possible, even for someone that is completely there and coherent, to have a slip up from time to time. But the gaffes for this current occupant of the White House, I mean, they're just happening every other day, as that congressman brought out. I mean, he's shaking hands with imaginary people. Hopefully those imaginary hands don't have imaginary handcuffs on them like AOC had yesterday. In any event, there's some very, very strange things happening in the United States of America. And yet you listen to Pete Buttigieg in his response yesterday and he says, of course not. We would never talk about the 25th Amendment with respect to Joe Biden. Listen to this montage put together by the RNC, clip 3.
The best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you, that you like to be able to, anyway.
From Charlotte, another line going from in Florida down to Tampa.
Of Putin's kleptocracy,
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to put him.
The idea that
Los Angeles and what am I doing here?
For two reasons. One, to.
We haven't been able to communicate it in a way that is, let me say it another way.
But the nature, not
a solid meeting they make a very good point. Here's the deal.
Here's what drives the driver in the states that are affected. Here's what you can do, the drivers.
We want to expand pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, millions of pre-K students.
There's just a minute and a half, and you could come up with quite a bit more of that. I mean, it's not funny. These things are happening all the time, but to just give it a little bit more context, if Tucker's right, and again, there's no defamation lawsuits going on that I know of, if Tucker's right, he's on his meds before he gets in front of those microphones. In fact, Tucker on a segment last night, you might Google the segment on the attack on America's southern border. The whole segment's worth seeing. But in passing, he talked about an interview that Joe Biden gave with, I think it was Telemundo, back in February of 2020, so just a little over a year ago. And there's Joe Biden. He's just come into the White House. He's new to the White House. And he talks about how all of these illegal immigrants just streaming across the border, how that's not a burden upon America. That's actually a gift. It's a gift. It's a blessing. This is what we need. This is what we want. Tucker, in the entire segment, talked about how these radicals, since legislation put forward by Ted Kennedy back in 1965, their goal is to fundamentally transform the United States, basically. And so Barack Obama, I mean, he's behind this recent wave. It's so much worse now, as Tucker brought out, than it was even during the first and second presidency or terms of Barack Obama. Now we're in the third term. And I mean, the floodgates have opened. In any event, what Tucker said is that before that Telemundo interview, Dr. Jill and Joe Biden's handlers put him on the drug. He's got to go on the drug if he's going to give an interview. If he's going to sit down and tell you, the American people, that these people swimming across the Rio Grande or getting onto the rafts, the most of them single men, young men, that's a gift to the United States of America. It's a gift. The way they see it, it's a gift to the Democrat Party. Because if they come across the southern border and they become dependent on the U.S. government, they're most likely going to vote Democrat. So they want this. They want this. Coming back to Joe Biden for a moment. I mean, it's gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. Word stumble here, word stumble there. The New York Times, as I said on Monday, I mean, the New York Times is, it's not talking about the drugs necessarily, but it's talking about how his handlers are just, you know, they don't want him to go off script even one word because it's going to end in disaster the way they see it. They know that he's frail. They know that he's going off to Delaware on the weekends to rest. He hasn't had anything going on today or yesterday. There's nothing on the schedule. And even some of his spokespeople are being asked about this. Listen to this exchange, clip two.
I noticed on the president's schedule the last 2 days, there have been no public events. Is he resting after the large international trips?
The president's been busy. I'll let Kareem speak to the president's schedule, but the president's been quite busy. Just because you don't see something necessarily on the public schedule doesn't mean that there's not a lot of work going on.
Is he involved in these meetings today, or what exactly has he been doing yesterday and today?
So he's been in meetings. I was scheduled to meet with him today in the Oval Office. So he's been meeting with his senior staff. He's been meeting with a staff. I think some of you may have seen him when the First Lady of Ukraine was visiting with our First Lady. I believe you saw him very briefly. So he's just been very busy dealing with the issues of the American people and meeting with his staff and senior staff the last 2 days.
He's just been very, very busy with lots of meetings. Nothing on the public schedule that these reporters look at. Is he exhausted? Is he resting after these trips? Not that wouldn't be something, you know, anyone traveling internationally would need a little bit of, for sure. But putting it all together, connecting all the dots. And we did that for you on Monday's show. Again, go to the Trumpet website if you didn't listen to or see that program yet. Because it's not getting nearly enough coverage. There are, though, a few reporters beginning to question, you know, where is he? What's he doing? Now, none of this means that the agenda is stalled. Here he's supposed, I mean, there were reports yesterday in the Washington Post that he's going to come out with this climate change executive action just to bypass Congress. I mean, this is a page right out of the Obama playbook, as if we needed more proof that Obama's the one calling the shots here. This was from the Washington Post just today. President Biden is set to travel to Somerset, Massachusetts on Wednesday to deliver an ultimatum on climate change. If Congress does not act to combat a fast warming planet, then the White House will tap its own powers to respond to the crisis. This is exactly what Obama said. If Congress doesn't act, I've got a pen and a phone, right? I'll bypass Congress if I have to. And in America Under Attack, of course, my father, he reminds you of this history. This is classic Obama. This is Obama stayed in Washington, D.C. after his second term for a reason. He had the shadow presidency all during the Trump years where he was just attacking Donald Trump relentlessly. And then he pulls off the steal with the help of others in 2020 using COVID and such. And now he's running the White House. It's full of Obama people. My father writes in America Under Attack, says, in his State of the Union address, February 2013, Obama said, I urge this Congress to pursue a bipartisan market-based solution to climate change. But if Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I mean, that's almost the exact same language that you saw in the Washington Post this morning. Joe Obama, as we often say, says, but if Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I will direct my cabinet to come up with executive action that we can take now and in the future. My father writes, Obama took these types of actions with unequaled frequency. He did this all the time. When Trump when Trump tried to say that the southern border crisis was a national emergency, the mainstream media in the United States went absolutely apoplectic over this. I mean, they couldn't, they were beside themselves because, well, this was just a power grab for Donald Trump. But now here comes Joe Bama, and hey, if Congress won't act, then I will, says Obama. We'll see. I guess that happens later today, this speech in Somerset, Massachusetts. But they're really, you listen to all of the spokespeople, they're capitalizing. Never let a crisis go to waste. They're capitalizing on the heat wave here in the United States, in Europe. I didn't realize before I asked Richard if he could sub in, by the way, on yesterday's show. I think he talked about some of the climate cult. But as he gave that program yesterday, I think it was about 100 degrees at Edstone. And, of course, a lot of buildings in the U.K. don't have air conditioning. And in fact, they're built to sort of, you know, hold on to heat because it can get kind of chilly there in the winter months. But when there's a heat wave, I mean, it's very uncomfortable. But Richard survived. I was happy to see that yesterday. He survived in the attic of all places, the attic of Edstone. I'm sure it was pretty warm up there. In any event, I saw this morning how that I think it's down to 79 degrees again. So the heat wave, I mean, it didn't go on for months and months and months in the UK and Europe. In fact, Richard emailed us today saying that the heat wave in 1976 was much longer than the one this summer. And 1976, if I'm not mistaken, is when the climate cult was saying that we've got to be worried about global cooling. So which is it? Well, it's whatever's convenient at the time, whatever conveniently fits into the narrative. It's hot. It's hot in July. So let's try to drum up business for climate change policies. And so many of these policies are just so radical. But they're never one to let a crisis go to waste. In this case, a crisis of some severe heat in the middle of the summer, as if that's a strange thing. This is the White House spokesperson yesterday on how that this was all forcing Joe Bama to act. Clip 4.
Speaking of climate change, so we are closely monitoring extreme heat conditions. Impacting much of Europe, as well as the extreme heat impacting the more than 100 million Americans who are struggling with extreme heat conditions here at home just this week alone. The impacts of extreme weather are intensifying across the globe, including here in the United States. No one is immune from climate change. It's why the president has been rallying the world to take the decisive action needed in this decade to tackle the climate change, the climate crisis. It's also why the president is committed to taking aggressive action to tackle climate change and made clear if the Senate won't act, he will.
Yep. If they won't act, then he'll do it. He'll do it. We'll see what his speech ends up revealing later today, or if this is just something that they're throwing out there in a slow news cycle at the end of July, early August, when so many of these politicians and talking heads are on vacation. In any event, there's always an agenda. Barack Obama is not going to let an opportunity go to waste to move forward. It doesn't matter what's happening at the southern border. It doesn't matter what's going to come upon the Democrat Party in November. Just keep going forward. Listen to Pete Buttigieg as he politicizes heat in July. This is clip 5.
When wind and solar won't power the homes in Europe, how do we not use hydrocarbons to make sure that near term these people aren't either freezing or dying from the heat? It seems like a real quandary at this point to try to do these things when near term we need power, we need energy. So how do you declare?
Well, I will say,
how do you declare a climate crisis in the middle of an actual weather crisis?
But this is what a transition looks like, right? This is exactly the challenge that we're living through. But also, I think there's a clear understanding that when it comes to the climate, we're running out of time. The science is unambiguous in terms of the level of threat, in terms of the lives and livelihoods that America and the world stand to lose if we don't accelerate our action.
There's a commentator there basically telling him, look, wind and solar, they don't do the job in Europe. There's not enough energy or power there. It was just, wasn't it just 15, 16 months ago when you had that deep freeze in Texas? When all of the solar power wasn't, the solar and the wind power, Texas is moving in that direction too, but it wasn't doing the job. People's homes weren't being heated. People were dying. And there they were, ready to capitalize on that as well. I guess it's any extreme weather, whether it's extreme cold or extreme hot. The solution is always wind and solar. Well, what about if the wind and solar doesn't do the job? We still have to make the transition can be a little bit difficult. It can be challenging, but we've got to transition forward. This is from Conservative Treehouse. It says, any possibility of the Biden administration creating an even deeper economic collapse under the auspices of climate change regulation has essentially been stalled by congressional opposition. You know, Joe Manchin and the others that say, no, don't want this. So now here comes Joe Obama saying, if Congress doesn't act, I will. Barack Obama, that's Barack Obama's language. If Congress doesn't act, I will. It says here, some, albeit not enough, congressional representatives can see what lies at the end of this fundamental energy change, a significant collapse of the U.S. economy. However, the committed ideologues behind Joe Biden are not going to let the legislative branch interfere in their climate change agenda. They're not going to slow down just because Congress won't support it. Joe Biden is an avatar, a political pawn, a cognitively declining guy who has no idea what is happening around him. So here's another commentator, one of the precious few, that's actually going there. Look at what's happening. Tucker says he's drugged up any time that he goes before the microphone. A man in obvious cognitive decline. Have you ever discussed the 25th Amendment? Of course not. Of course. It's never come up, say the communists around Joe Biden. It says here, the people behind the Biden campaign, those in real control of what this is about, have not hidden their goals and aspirations. They're not even trying to conceal it anymore. Listen to this brief montage, clip one.
When it comes to the climate, we're running out of time. The science is unambiguous in terms of the level of threat, in terms of the lives and livelihoods that America and the world stand to lose if we don't accelerate our action.
But not take steps and endanger the climate work that we're trying to do to make sure that we're on a better footing to accelerate the transition.
But this is what a transition looks like, right?
I'm not saying transitions are easy, and I'm not saying they're very fast, but we have to do everything we can to accelerate them.
The solution is to move as fast as possible away from fossil fuels.
Of course, the more pain we are all experiencing from the high price of gas, the more benefit there is for those who can access electric vehicles.
There he said the silent part out loud there at the end. The more pain most people experience, the greater the benefit for those who have access to the electric. The three people that have the electric vehicles, assuming their batteries work, they will benefit from this crisis. Now, we'll get to the cost, the electricity cost here in just a second. But this is the way they think. The pain is worth it. The transition's going to be painful, but we've got to accelerate. Listen to this Obama, this former Obama energy official, just earlier this week, clip nine.
We have to end the use of fossil fuel in the United States and around the world if we're going to address climate change. That is just a fact if you believe the science.
We have to change it in the U.S. and around the world. So how are you going to do this to China or India or Brazil or the Middle East or anywhere else? How much carbon emission is there from the U.S. as compared to China, for example? They want to destroy the fossil fuel industry. She said so. Just in the United States, that's where they have the power to do it. And they will do it if given the opportunity. They make no bones about it. I thought this was just a really helpful and educational exchange between Congressman Massey. He's a Republican. and he's there with Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, in this exchange yesterday. And listen to Congressman Massey and then the response from Buttigieg. This is clip 8.
The average household uses 17% of their electricity for air conditioning. And that would mean the average household uses 1,870 kilowatt hours per year for air conditioning. If that average household plugged in electric cars, do you know how much more electricity they would use in comparison to the air conditioning that air conditions their whole house?
No, but again, I would emphasize it will
be less energy
overall.
Let me help you with that first before we go on, because the numbers are important. It would take four times as much electricity to charge the average household's cars as the average household uses on air conditioning. Do you think that could be? So if we reach the goal by 2030 that Biden has of 50% adoption instead of 100% adoption, that means the average household would use twice as much electricity charging one of their cars as they would use for all of the air conditioning that they use for the entire year. Do you think this could contribute to rolling blackouts and brownouts in areas of the country where air conditioning is basically considered essential?
Not if we prepare.
Not if we prepare. I mean, the transition is going to be painful. But look, if this is too much of a burden on the power grid system, I mean, we'll fix that too, say these communists with this grand utopian vision that the power grids can handle everything, that using this kind of electricity, I mean, huge amounts of electricity, that's not going to cost anything. I guess it's just free. And then getting rid of gas stations. These people are living in a fantasy world. Of course there would be rolling blackouts. Of course it would drain the power grid in the United States of America. And how about degrading the environment with the mass production of these massive batteries that still don't work especially well, the batteries that they put in these electric cars, you know, the ones made in China, by the way. And then when the batteries go bad, you had a story earlier this week, this woke family that got their electric car, everything's great, then the battery dies, and they come to find out the battery cost just as much as the car itself did when they first got it. So now they've got to get another battery. And what do you do with the old battery? I mean, do you just, I guess, load up the landfills? Is that good for the environment? These people are ignorant. I mean, there's no perfect technology here. We're not saying that. But destroy your own economy, destroy your own country in the name of electric vehicles or in the name of clean energy. The amount of energy that would be used, that would be paid for, supposing every house in America had two electric vehicles, the drain, just the drain on the energy grid. And it's like it's not even a consideration. It's not, you know, Thomas Massie, by the way, he's a Trump-supporting Republican. He says, look, I've had my electric car for years. I have my solar panels. I believe in this technology. I'm bullish on the future of electric vehicles and the like. But let's talk about reality here for a moment. Buttigieg has no clue. Listen to clip 7 from yesterday.
Which uses more electricity? We're talking about residential electricity here. A refrigerator when it's running or an electric car when it's charging in your garage?
I would expect a car.
Would you say it uses twice as much or 25 times as much?
I would think closer to 25 times as much. Yeah.
It's actually 50 at the instantaneous moment, but over the course of a year, if I take the numbers from the U.S. Department of Energy about the average household, how many vehicles they own and how far they drive, over the course of a year, an American household would use 25 times as much electricity for their electric car as they would for their refrigerator if they had 100% adoption. And the average family has two vehicles, and this would be if the average family had two electric vehicles. Do you think it would strain the grid if everybody plugged in 25 refrigerators in every household?
Well, if we didn't make any upgrades to the grid, sure. I mean, if we had yesterday's grid with tomorrow's cars, it's not going to work.
So everybody just get the $60,000 electric vehicle and then don't worry. The big government, the ever-expanding, massive, bloated government in Washington, D.C., we'll just transform the grid as well. We've got trillions of dollars to spend. We can come up with trillions, no problem. They're destroying their own nation. Communist infiltration, an attack from within. America under attack. What? No better. There's no better time for this book, by the way. It'll be here from the printer in just a couple weeks. Hopefully, it's not being delivered by electric vehicles. Early August. If you haven't ordered your copy, you can call our operators 1-866-930-3024. You can get to the booklet even as we speak on our website, thetrumpet.com. Many of our viewers have already read the booklet. It's been online for the last month or so. I thought this was in Richard's news stack from the UK, from Electroverse. It says the largest summer sea ice extent since 2008 traps Arctic ships. Coldest July air mass in 70 years blows through the Bering Strait. So you've got the heat wave in the south here in the United States. Well, I guess it stretches across much of the country. You had the mini heat wave in the UK. It seems like it's back to normal today, relatively. Europe as well. And then, according to this article, you've got this Arctic blast, the coldest air mass in 70 years blowing through the Bering Strait. You're not going to hear much about this from the Joe Obama people. It's all about the heat wave at the moment. It says here, the mainstream are heat chasers. They report only on stories that fit the party agenda. This cherry picking leads to a painfully misinformed public when it comes to the climate, which is exactly what they want. They want you misinformed, or they want to complicate things. My father makes the point in America Under Attack, how that with the Mueller investigation and so on, and of course the mainstream media there to try to make it complicated. This is exactly what the devil wants, because he knows that most people, they're not going to spend much time really getting into the detail of this. And it's the same with climate change. It's madness. It's a cult. They just go on and on. All the scientists agree. Well, as someone posted on Twitter the other day, of course they all agree if the ones that disagree are censored. It's the same with COVID. It's the same with the vaccine. It's the same with the lockdowns. If the ones that have a differing view are blotted out or are censored, then of course they can come forward repeatedly, relentlessly, and say everybody, all of the experts agree. But do they? And what do they have to say about this Arctic blast through the Bering Strait? It says here, it usually stands, however, that if the mainstream media goes silent on a particular locale, then it's probably because that particular locale isn't behaving as they would like. You see, it should be, to fit the narrative that we've got at the moment, it should be actually hot. There should be a heat wave blowing through the Bering Strait. That's not what's happening. It says here, case in point today, we have the Arctic and Greenland refusing to play ball. Earth's most northern reaches are actually experiencing persistent and long-lasting cooling, which is far more telling than a brief burst of heat in, for example, Western Europe, which, number one, is forecast to be over before it's even really begun. It's already 79 degrees at Edstone. I remember those days. I mean, that's even, for by British standards, that's even warm. But 79 degrees, we would love that right here in Oklahoma right about now. We had our hottest day of the SEP yesterday, by the way, and had some welcome. It's still pretty warm outside, but some nice cloud cover this morning, thankfully. But yesterday was a scorcher, for sure. Now, again, these extreme weather conditions, it's not going to be this way in the world tomorrow, for sure. I mean, there's going to be pleasant, you know, moderate temperatures in both the summer and winter months. God will see to it. And we will be taking care of our environment in ways that we certainly don't today. Man has ruined this earth, the surface of the earth, in so many ways. But this is, they're not seeking after your best. I mean, they're not seeking after what's best for you. They're seeking for more control, more power. They want to expand the centralized government in the swamp. And they want to destroy the middle class. They want you to be poorer as they get richer. You think if the power grids go down that Barack Obama's not going to have power at his house, at Martha's Vineyard, his mansion, or his mansion in Washington, D.C.? You think he's going to be without power? You think he's going to be totally dependent on a solar panel when we start having these rolling blackouts? If these cult-like ideas were ever carried out, they really are members of a cult. Largest summer sea ice extent since 2008 traps Arctic ships. So it's contributing to the supply chain crisis. The freeze. The freeze at the Bering Strait. Pretty amazing. A story that you're not going to get to hear too much about at or on the news. This is from Reuters, again, just to follow up on the disastrous trip that Joe Biden had last week to Saudi Arabia. And keep in mind, he's making it harder for American oil companies to drill. He's going to Saudi Arabia, you know, the pariah state, as he called it at a debate in 2019, groveling before the Saudi leaders, trying to get them to give us more oil or to produce more oil. And then you listen to this. It says Saudi Arabia doubles second quarter Russian fuel oil imports for power generation. So here, the Saudis export so much of their oil. Russia's price for oil is discounted right now because they don't have as many buyers because of some of the sanctions put upon them because of Ukraine. So the Saudis, just try to wrap your mind around this for a moment. Biden says no to drilling in the U.S. He goes to Saudi Arabia and says, hey, we need you to drill more, right? Because I guess this will clean the environment. We need you to drill more. And, oh, by the way, we'd like to buy your oil. And then Reuters reveals this week that Saudi Arabia is getting more of its oil from Russia. I mean, you can't make this up. You just can't. Russia's selling it cheap right now. Saudi Arabia, it's the middle of the summer over there, too. So they want the Saudis in their nation to be able to cool their homes. And they know they need oil to be able to do that. It just shows how that all of these comments you've seen in these montages and such today, it's just all politics. Everything's politicized. Well, I don't need to continue on with this. There was another story about the price for a gallon of gas in Saudi Arabia to fuel your car at something like $2.35 per gallon. It's about half as cheap as it is in the United States right now. So they're managing to keep the prices down. And then you have the price drop, 20 to 30 cents, I think it is, over the last several weeks. And the Joe Biden people, they're out there. They're out there taking credit for this. 2 seconds ago, because gas was $5, $6 a gallon, they were saying, well, we can't control it. It's Putin. It's Putin's war in Ukraine. Or it's COVID. And then it drops 20 cents and they come out and they start breaking their arms, patting themselves on the back, saying, look at what we've done. Look at what we've done. There's a reporter yesterday that called them out for this. Look, aren't you having it both ways? Because when the gas prices go up, it's got nothing to do with the president. But when it goes down, it's all Joe Obama. America under attack. Well, there's more that I could get to, but let's just reserve 10 or 15 minutes for a Bible study at the end. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can reach us, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
What has happened to the United States of America?
The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Nice promo there that the guys put together on the new book, America Under Attack. Any way that we can plug that, we're certainly trying to do that. I'm sure it'll be one of our most requested booklets ever once it finally is in stock here in early August. A few weeks ago, I talked about the subject of zeal and used that example from early on in Herbert Armstrong's life, where he talked about how that he was, before conversion, of course, when he was younger and so on, that he was pretty cocky and vain. And God certainly had to crush that vanity when he converted Mr. Armstrong to the truth and gave to him his precious Holy Spirit. But in writing about that more arrogant time before conversion, Mr. Armstrong did say in his autobiography that at least he was mentally alive. He did have a kind of fiery ambition, even if it was misguided. He wanted to make a success of himself. He wanted to really do something in life. And we bring this up a lot, quite a lot at SCP and even in the college sphere or in the academy here on campus through the school year, because it is a constant challenge for those of us involved in the educational process of our young people to just really help them to see how important it is for them to be ambitious. Now, ultimately, you want to be ambitious for God above all. You want to push yourself to do great things for God. We had a forum this morning, a live hookup to our Jerusalem office. Brad McDonald, he opened the forum by showing our campers here in Edmond, Oklahoma, showing them this new institute building that we're renovating at the moment and how it's situated in close proximity to the Prime Minister's residence and the presidential palace there in downtown Jerusalem. And then after his remarks, we had some of these college students that are over there right now working on the excavation at the Ophel, helping to renovate the institute at night. They're working hard. They're putting in extra hours. And Mr. McDonald was talking about how important it is for those young people to really be motivated and to work hard and to really take advantage of this opportunity that they have. And then all of these college students just around the age of 20 telling our campers just what a tremendous opportunity this phase of digging, excavating, and opening this institute in Jerusalem is for the young people. And what an opportunity it is for growth. What an opportunity it represents to participate in God's purpose, in God's plan. God really is trying to stir our young people, to inspire them to be ambitious, to be zealous for God. God's zealous. I was telling the, I think I might have brought this out on the air before, but I was telling the workers before camp started, because the summer's been busy, quite a few of the workers were on tour with Celtic Throne, and I just said how that, you know, it was about a week before SEP started, and I said how that if you're like me, you probably feel like you're not as prepared as you would like to be for this camp experience, for being a counselor or a worker or whatever it might be. But I just told them that, look, God and Jesus Christ have been thoroughly preparing for this camp all summer long, even before that. And the goal here, the objective here, is for us as workers, and okay, we've only got 6-7 days before it starts. Now, of course, it's in full motion. We're about halfway through the summer camp. But I said the best way to prepare for this and the days that remain is to just plug in to the mind of Christ, Philippians 2, verse 5, to really get God's perspective, to really tap into the thoughts of God, to really build on the zeal that God has for these young people. This is from Isaiah 9 and verse 6. It says here, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." I mean, this is God's family government. God's family government is about to be established over all the earth. How much zeal do we have for this outcome, this prophecy, this reality? This is coming. It's coming to Jerusalem. Jesus Christ is about to return to that city of peace. That's what it will become when God establishes his family government at that headquarters city, and it rules over the entire earth, and the kingdoms of this earth become the kingdoms of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You can read about that at the end of Revelation 11. But look at, like you heard in the first segment, look at how zealous so many of these radicals are for their policies, for their agenda, which hurts so many people. Look at what communists have done throughout history. Look at what they did to Ukraine in the first, or the 20th century, the previous century. Look at what they can come in to do to a nation that maybe has some prosperity, some abundance. You know, in the case of the United States and Britain, of course, that came upon us because of God and the promises made to Abraham. But you get human government in there, and every time he fouls it up. That's been the way of man. We talked about this with respect to COVID, that the cure is worse than the disease. In every case, when you listen to these experts go on and on about their fantasies, they always make things worse. They always make matters worse, but they have so much zeal. Forget about the painful transition. Look, we've got a transition. We'll redo all the entire electrical grid. Everybody will have two electric vehicles in their garages. They're destroying the middle class, as I said in the first segment, the working class. They're making Americans poorer because of their policies. And yet they go forward with a kind of satanic zeal. Speaking of zeal, Satan has a lot of zeal. It's not according to knowledge, as Paul said. It's not according to God's truth. His zeal is aimed always in the direction of destruction, misery, suffering. It says in verse 7 here, "Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever." It says the zeal of the Eternal of Hosts will perform this. God's zeal, you see, will bring it all about. there's going to be no end of the increase in growth in God's family government plan, God's family vision. This is what needs to be right at the forefront of our minds. And look, if human beings in this world today can have so much zeal and passion for all these misguided policies, what about us as God's family? What about us? We're here to declare this message, to declare our Heavenly Father, and to do so with the kind of zeal that God Himself has. This is all going to be performed, as this prophecy says in Isaiah 9. It's all going to be performed exactly as the Bible says that it will, and it will be according to God's zeal. That word for zeal in the Hebrew, it has to do with just being on fire. And it also can talk about or have to do with jealousy, you know, where scriptures bring out how that God is a jealous God. I mean, He really is passionate. He really has strong feelings and emotions. Now, they always flow in the direction of godly love. He's not emotionally out of control. But God is a God of ardent zeal. And that's the kind of zeal and energy and passion that really does preserve and protect and maintain everything that God creates and accomplishes. He's a zealous God, and He wants to know just how zealous we are for the things of God. And we, as I say, we talk to our young people about just developing this kind of godly zeal so that they can really work for God and be passionate about it. The spirit of our age, it's a Laodicean age, as it says there at the end of Revelation 3. And you look at the characteristic that really defines the Laodicean movement, that rebellious movement that fell away from God. And they lacked zeal. Revelation 3, notice this, verse 14, it says, "And unto the angel of the church of Laodiceans write, These things saith the Amen, the faithful, the true witness, the beginning of the creation of God." Verse 15 says, "I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold or hot." See, I wish it was one way or the other. But with the Laodiceans, they've lost that red-hot, passionate zeal or devotion to God. My father wrote in Malachi's message, he says, God wants to see if His other ministers have the same zeal. Do they fear God as Mr. Armstrong and Levi did? You see that Laodicean rebellion? It was a test, a massive test for the people of God. Are you going to just go along with the crowd that loses its zeal, its devotion to God, and just kind of float downstream? Or are you going to show some life? Notice verse 16, it says, "So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth." Because you're lukewarm, because you lack zeal, you can't stay in God's household. You can't continue serving God's family. And you can go on and read in the verses that follow that God has to try and test these Laodiceans. He has to send them into the tribulation so that they can hopefully regain their fiery zeal for God. Verse 17 says, "Because you say, I'm rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and know not that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked." I mean, they think everything's fine. I guess they think they're on fire for God. But they're not. Spiritually speaking, they're just wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. God says, "I counsel you to buy of me gold tried in the fire." That's in verse 18. God wants us to be fired up, and if we won't be, then He's going to use more corrective means to try to build that red-hot zeal within us. Perhaps we can continue with this study at a later time, but we are out of time for today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.